Hello and welcome to P4A's Let's Talk Rare, a monthly podcast from Partners for Access.
Bringing you the most important news, trends and discoveries in the world of orphan drugs and cell and gene therapy.
Join me, Georgie Rack.
And me, Owen Bryant.
To analyse these developments and what they mean to you. Hello and welcome to the show. This month, the focus is on the new EU HTA regulation, which is due to be implemented in 2025. It will be mandatory for all newly launched ATMPs and oncology medicines to undergo a joint clinical assessment at the EU level. So what does this mean for drug developers of ATMPs? Is the EU still an attractive market? And what does this mean for your launch strategies moving forward? I'm joined today with Chloe Shepherd, Senior Consultant and our EU HTA expert, and Akshay Kumar, a partner at P4A and has over 20 years of experience supporting pharma and biotech companies successfully launch their orphan drugs and ATMPs. So welcome to the show, guys. Let's do a quick introduction. So let's go to Akshay first.
Hi, Georgie. So yeah, thank you for the introductions. I'm a partner at Partners for Access and I've been working with Chloe, who is our in-house expert to track what's going on with the EU HTA. And also starting to initiate discussions with different pharma companies to help them start preparing for the joint EU HTA.
And as Georgie said, along with Akshay, we have Chloe.
Thank you guys for the introduction. So yeah, I'm Chloe Shepherd. I'm a senior consultant at Partners for Access. As the team has said, I'm closely following and monitoring the developments of the EU HTA space, looking at how we can support our clients through this huge change that's going to be happening in 2025 and which we need to prepare for now. So I'm really excited to be having this discussion.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for the intro. So let's start with a quick overview of these key milestones. I know we spoke about it before, but let's give the context to the discussion. What exactly are they?
The current state of play with the EU HTA is that from 2025, it will be mandatory for all ATMPs and oncology medicines to undergo joint clinical assessment at European level. The pricing and reimbursement decisions for those products will remain the responsibility of member states, but the assessment of value will be done at that international European level. The key timelines to be aware of, so from 2022, so last year, through to 2025, there's an implementation phase where the preparatory work for developing the methodologies and the procedures for the joint clinical assessment are being put in place. From 2025, all ATMPs and oncology medicines will need to undergo joint clinical assessment. From 2028, it will then apply to all orphan medicinal products. And from 2030, it will apply to all centrally authorised EU medicines.
Thanks, Chloe. So in May, we held the first part of our free dropping clinic. We had over 70 people from industry join the call. And it was really, really interesting, actually, to hear that a lot of companies have not even started to think about the necessary internal changes needed to be ready for this implementation. Akshay, is this something that we're seeing with our clients at the moment? And is a wait and see strategy the right way forward?
So this is a very interesting question, Georgie. I think at least what we are seeing across our different clients and even in the drop-in clinic was you can think of companies in three buckets. So there's one set of companies who don't really have an impending portfolio, impending launch in 2025. So they've put it on the back burner saying it's more wait and watch. When the frameworks are set up, we will start driving the change management initiative internally. Then there's a second bucket of clients who are launching products in 2025 or around that time, but they're keeping a wait and watch and more reactive strategy where once the framework comes up, they will react to the situation. Now, there are risks with that, with this wait and watch approach is, are you setting up your asset for failure if you're not already reacting to the environment that is going to, which is going to be a reality from 2025? And then there's a third group of companies which we are seeing where they are seeing this as a big change management initiative. This is not only an access opportunity or a challenge. It is beyond access. So think of it like this. Imagine company A is looking to acquire some assets in which they want to launch or ATMP which they will launch. They need to start factoring in this EU joint HTA step, even in asset acquisition processes or in licensing processes. Also, they have to start thinking of how we're going to commercialize these assets. You know, the staggered launches in Europe, which we are so used to, where you start with the EU5 and Germany in particular, and then start expanding across Europe. That approach may need to change because with the new framework, there is an expectation within 2 years, there is patient access across Europe. So that changes how we even commercialize things. So these forward-thinking companies are not just seeing it as an access change management issue, but a broader organizational change management issue. And how are they actually going to implement the EU joint HTA within their own organizations and then drive successful access to their assets. So this is where the three buckets are. And I would strongly recommend companies not to have the wait and watch approach. Even though you may not have, say, a launch in 2025, there are these other aspects, like if you're acquiring an asset or if you're making developmental decisions for drugs, which you will be launching in 2020, and when it applies to all orphan medicine products, you need to start factoring in what would be required to succeed at that EU joint HTA level. Because if you don't succeed, then you're not having a commercial launch in Europe. And that's losing a lot of potential on the assets. So the wait and watch approach is very risky in that sense.
Have you got any insight into why there might be a reluctance to be more proactive to these regulation changes? Why are companies dragging their feet?
It's a very interesting question. Again, I would say there's different types of companies. There's some companies, especially US headquartered companies, who are not even fully aware of the EU joint clinical HTA. So there, it's a matter of driving internal organizational awareness and a call to action that, yes, we need to drive internal change management. But then there are other companies who are aware of it, but because there's not much clarity on what this would look like, are taking a more reactive approach, which is let's get the framework come out and then we'll adapt things accordingly. But that's where the risks lie, because decisions you're making today will come back to bite you 2 or 3 years down the line, like, for example, your trial design decisions. So we strongly urge companies that this is the time to start planning, embrace uncertainty, drive awareness within the organization that this is a reality in another year's time. And then third, start adapting your internal process and make yourself more agile to react, more agile to fit your strategies in once the EU joint clinical HTA becomes a reality. It's not a light exercise. It is a change management exercise that requires time. Hence, we strongly suggest that this is the time to start planning. Embrace the uncertainty, start developing agile processes internally and drive that change within the organization so you're ready in 2025 to engage effectively with EU payers.
If we look even at the recent ARM report, actually, that was released last week, what they did was start to look at all ATMPs that are currently have a successful launcher and are on the market in Europe. And actually, all of them, bar two, would have failed going through this new implementation. So it's really, really key. The wait and see or the wait and watch strategy really is going to set you up to fail moving forward, I think, is what we're learning here. I mean, Chloe, I don't know if you've got some more context on that. And I know there've been quite a few different news stories that have come out on this. So maybe you want to give us an update on those, if you could.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Georgie. And I think the ARM, the Alliance of Regenerative Medicine point that you made is really pertinent. I've seen a lot of discussion on this across LinkedIn, across different news sources over the past couple of weeks. And it's quite a significant headline. You know, 90% of the gene therapies currently approved wouldn't have made it through the joint clinical assessment procedure. And I think when you look into it a bit further, you realise that actually the assessment is based on the fact that the joint clinical assessment will be wanting randomised controlled trials as the gold standard, which is very, very difficult for the gene therapies, which are approved mostly in rare genetic conditions, for them to actually meet those very high evidence standards. So that's a really kind of significant topic at the moment, and something I think which relates quite well to one of the other news updates, which is in June this year, so last month, the first multi-stakeholder meeting of the EU joint HTA happened. And that was a kind of inaugural meeting where all of the multi-stakeholder network, all of the members got together and had a meeting. And that really served to listen to the perspectives of clinicians, patients, industry associations, and all get around the table to voice their opinion on how the joint clinical assessment procedure should be shaped. And I think that's really important because obviously with this ARM headline and the statistic that they've identified, it's going to be important that the stakeholders have a say around the table. And there's clearly work to be done in terms of shaping joint clinical assessment procedure to make sure that we're not having gene therapies failing the assessment and failing to get access in Europe. That's not the direction that we want to be going in. We have to remember that the EHTA, the whole point of it to begin with, was to improve access to medicines across Europe, improve timely access. So that's one of the other key developments, is the multi-stakeholder meeting. And the third update I wanted to mention is around the GBA. The GBA announced that they will be coordinating parallel scientific advice between EMA and the EU HTA. And this has been another topic of discussion quite significantly around the past 12 months, with industry frustrated that the number of joint scientific consultation slots that were offered initially by the EHTA was very, very minimal. And if you consider the number of manufacturers that are developing assets that are going to be affected by this in 2025, which is really only less than 2 years away now, not giving manufacturers the opportunity to co-create and to discuss their clinical development plans. So the GBA from September this year will be offering to coordinate that process. It's not exactly clear how many slots or how many manufacturers will be able to engage in those consultations, but we would certainly recommend, if you are going to be affected by the joint clinical assessment procedure in 2025, start looking into this process and see if you can get one of those joint scientific consultation slots, because no doubt there is an amount of those going. So I think it's definitely something that manufacturers should be looking to leverage with this recent announcement.
Absolutely. In my introduction, I made a couple of points. Before we finish up, I just want to ask you both the same question. Is the EU still an attractive market? Based on what we've heard today, do you think drug developers in orphan drugs and ATMPs will still find Europe attractive?
Well, interesting question, Georgie. Will they find it attractive? I think the EU combined is too big a market to ignore, right? Take all of EU's. Typically, it accounts for 20-25% of a branded drug sales, especially in orphan drugs. So it's too big to ignore. The wait and watch approach, as we've discussed, has too many risks. So this is why we strongly urge our clients that, you know, if you have a European-centric strategy, you should start acting now. Now, there will be some clients for whom Europe is deprioritized. But even in those cases, it's advisable because we don't know what the spillover effects will be of the EU joint clinical HTA. You know, are the countries that also have established HTA system, how are they going to get impacted by these decisions? So take, for example, in the UK, which is outside of the EU clinical joint HTA, how are the EU clinical joint HTA reports going to impact payers in the UK with NICE, for example? These are all question marks. So Europe or ignoring the EU joint clinical HTA could be a futile exercise and could result in a lot of risk for your assets. So this is why this is the time to act now.
Thanks, Akshay. What about you, Chloe? Anything to add on that?
Yeah, I agree with everything Akshay mentioned. And I think while the EU HTA, obviously the Joint Clinical Assessment, is European, we have to remember that the price and reimbursement decisions ultimately still will be the responsibility of member states. So I think ultimately access and how successful, if we think about patient access in the holistic sense of is the treatment getting to the patients, I think that will still be quite a national level decision and a national sort of, there will be nuances at the national level to that. So I agree. I think although Europe's being considered as a whole, I think there's still pockets of opportunity at national level to get patient access. And it shouldn't be something that's, as Akshay mentioned, that's taken off the table completely just because of this joint clinical assessment process.
I'd like to ask as well, just sort of circling back to the first question, which is what one piece of advice would you give companies that are reticent to adapt to this change? What would be the first thing that you would advise them to do, apart from obviously contacting Partners for Access for advice?
The first thing that I would suggest is thinking about what we just mentioned. What is the downside of ignoring this? What happens if you ignore it versus if you act? And I think there's a lot of risk in just having that watch and wait approach and just sitting and waiting, because even if you're one of those companies where you're not launching until 2028, the clinical development plans that are going to be affected, you need to be shaping now. So there's still definitely that urgency to act, even if you're sitting there thinking, oh, well, I'll just see and kind of wait and see what the other products do. Definitely you have the advantage that you can do that, but your clinical trials are still ongoing at the moment. So the first thing that I would do is consider that the risks of acting and not acting. And then there's different levels of action, right? There's monitoring approaches where you can do more internal exercises. There's more proactive things that companies can be doing and getting involved in shaping the framework. So I think it's probably on a company by company basis, it's the level at which they want to get involved and the amount of resources they want to dedicate to this, depending on their current situation.
And I'd like to add to Chloe's point, and I think one thing which companies need to start doing is not see this just as an access issue or an opportunity. This is beyond access. It even impacts things like we discussed earlier, BD&L assessments. It impacts your development plans, as we mentioned. Impacts how you even commercialize your drugs going down. Don't take this as a trivial access challenge, but take it as an opportunity to reshape the organization and make yourself better prepared for EU.
Thank you. Well, if you're listening to that, we've got some incredible experts here. You'd be crazy not to take their advice. So I think that leads us nicely on to what we want to talk about next, Georgie.
Absolutely. So guys, we are not leaving you hanging. Partners for Access are here to support you along this journey up to 2025, even and beyond to 2028. What we're doing is we've had the first part of our free drop-in clinic. We've actually setting up a second drop-in clinic. It'll be held on the 22nd of September and it'll be via Zoom, and we will share those links. Do keep an eye on our website, our LinkedIn pages for the registration links. And what can folks expect, Chloe, in part two? What will it be about and what will be the key takeaways that folks can expect at our drop-in clinic?
Yeah, thanks, Georgie. So I think at the drop-in clinic next time, we really want to make sure there's a maximum engagement with the audience. So we want to keep the session as interactive as possible. We want to hear from you. What are your concerns? What questions do you have? And share learnings and best practices of what companies have been doing at the moment. I will also obviously be giving an update on the latest developments, the latest news. As we mentioned, we're actively monitoring this space. So all of that will be included as well.
Perfect. Thank you to my guests today, Akshay and Chloe. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you to my co-host, Obi-Wan, and we'll see you next month. EcoA, Let's Talk Rare, is brought to you by Partners for Access. To find out more about Partners for Access and our commitment to sustainable orphan drug and cell and gene therapy access, please visit our website, www.partnersforaccess.com. Make sure you search for Let's Talk Rare in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Click to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Partners for Access, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.